top story, Iran's foreign minister has expressed concern about the rise of Daesh and other Takfiri groups in Afghanistan. Syria says Israeli forces have shot dead a former member of Syrian parliament who had spent 12 years in jail in Israel. Also ahead, thousands of people gather near the presidential palace in the Sudanese capital demanding the resignation of the transitional government. Welcome to the program. Our top story, Iran's foreign minister has expressed concern about the rise of Daesh and other Takfiri groups in Afghanistan. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark during a meeting with Peter Lonsky, Austria's Secretary General for Foreign Affairs in the Federal Ministry for European and International Affairs. Iran's top diplomat called on the European Union to adopt a more responsible approach toward the rights of displaced Afghan people. The Austrian official condemned the latest terror attack in Afghanistan, adding that Tehran and Vienna have shared concerns about Daesh in the Central Asian country. Political commentator Mike Billington says the United States and the European Union are to blame for the rise of Daesh terrorists in Afghanistan.
The Russians and the Chinese, but especially the Russians, have identified the fact that the continuation of the opium trade in Afghanistan and the danger of the ISIS and Daesh reconstituting themselves there can be directly blamed on the insane policy being followed by the U.S. and the EU right now of literally withholding Afghan people's money, the $9 billion that were Afghans' money, not the Taliban's money, but the people of Afghanistan. Which was deposited there and which they're refusing to return, which they are insisting both the EU today, Borrell, and the Federal Reserve here and Blinken, that they absolutely will not release the people's money, even though there is mass starvation, there's a complete collapse of their health system. The Afghans are losing their ability to combat ISIS, which they've been fighting all along. But they're losing their ability to do it. And I'll read you this quote from Sternik. He said, "Today, according to reports from our foreign missions, the Taliban began to lose anti-terrorist potential because of money shortages and a series of quite high-profile, painful terror attacks." Proves this to be the case.
Tens of Afghans have been killed and many others injured after three blasts rocked a Shia mosque in Afghanistan's southern city of Kandahar. The blast came just a week after a terrorist attack on Shia worshippers in the northern city of Kunduz left at least 50 people dead. Our correspondent Rahmatullah Balwan is in Kabul.
Kandahar mosque blast was the deadliest incident since the U.S. military withdrawal from Afghanistan in August. It was the second week in a row that a Shia mosque came under an attack planned by Daesh terrorist group.
I think Daesh attacks must be considered as crimes against humanity. They kill hundreds without being held accountable. The perpetrators are Takfiri terrorist groups and the enemies of Afghanistan and Islam. Taliban, as a new ruler, should maintain security, not only for their officials, but also for citizens.
The recent bomb attacks that targeted our innocent people have no place in Islam. They are misusing Islam's name. The government should take decisive measures and bring those responsible to justice.
Observers see the attacks as part of a larger plot to sow seditions between Muslim brothers in Afghanistan. They add that there are hands-off intelligence agencies and countries behind this divisive plot.
Being defeated in Iraq and Syria, the Daesh terrorist group is taking revenge on Afghan Shias. Also, the U.S. is seeking revenge for its defeat in Afghanistan.
Kandahar attacks comes in line of a series of attacks targeting the unity of Afghan Muslims. Moreover, the most important point about these attacks is that the U.S. is trying to create tensions in the region to involve Iran, India, and Russia in an unwanted war.
The Afghanistan Shia Clerics Council condemned the attack and urged the Taliban government to take action against Daesh and fulfill their promises. Shia clerics called for further unity and solidarity among all Muslims. The recent deadly bomb blasts have caused a wave of shock among Afghans, especially in big cities. Many here say they now expect the Taliban to put an end to the terror attacks by Daesh and establish security in the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Israeli forces have assassinated a former Syrian parliament member who had spent years in the regime's jails. During our news review program, we discussed that issue with our guests.
Now, welcome everyone to the news review program where we get in-depth in one of the day's tops. Israeli forces have assassinated a former Syrian parliament member who had spent years in the regime's prisons. According to Syrian media, Mehdad al-Saleh was killed in the village of Ain al-Tina when Israeli snipers targeted him on his way home. The Syrian village is near Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. The Syrian government condemned the killing as, quote, a cowardly criminal act. It said Saleh had spent 12 years in prison in Israel. He was jailed in 1985 for what Tel Aviv called resistance to Israeli authorities. Joining us now on the program is Sayed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator from London, and Mr. Arnold August, author and lecturer, joining us from Montreal. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Sayed Mohsen Abbas, we're going to start with you, your latest thoughts on this recent assassination and its ramifications.
It's a blatant continued violation of the national sovereignty of Syria. It's a violation of the human rights of the individuals, of course, who are being killed extrajudicially here. There's no justification whatsoever for the actions of the Israelis within international law. Paragraph 4, Article 2 of the UN Charter says all members shall refrain in their international relations from the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. So Israel is just totally in violation of international law, and there's no arguing one way or another. They use the excuse or the notion of preemptive strikes to deter what they regard as their legitimate targets and foes. But the fact of the matter on the ground is that they often have no evidence, they supply no evidence, they don't admit to the fact that they've done these attacks in the first place. So they're literally a lawless, absolutely renegade, rogue state, which essentially commits terrorist acts on other nations' territories, and nobody is there to hold them to account. Of course, the reality is that the resistance axis is at war with Israel. Israel has been violating not just Syria, but also, of course, Iraqi territory, Lebanese territory. It's involved in Yemen against the people's movements there. There really isn't a theater of violence or conflict that Israel isn't already engaged in as part of its expansionist Yinon plan, or as part of its peripheral doctrine. It's very hard to see how Israel can be stopped other than by force. And I think this is where Israel is increasingly provoking its neighbors towards them. They've occupied the Golan Heights. They go in and attack anybody who's operating in that region already for a territory which they've occupied illegally, and there is just endless. I mean, I'll just give you one figure. 200 missile attacks or aircraft attacks were launched just between 2017 and 18 by Israel on Syrian territory. That has increased, I think, at least twofold since then over the last year or so. The attack on September the 4th, again, Israeli aircraft claiming that they're going to hit Syrian air defense systems or whatever. They also did another attack on October the 8th with the targeting of a drone depot, the T4 base in central Syria, which they say killed even foreign fighters. You see, they say all these things. October the 13th, another Israeli airstrike targeted a communications tower and other sites near Palmyra in central Syria. The list goes on and on. Yet there is no evidence presented by Israel for this, and there is no accountability. And really, they're just provoking what I think is an inevitable war in the Middle East of a really cataclysmic proportion. And if you think Syria was bad or Iraq was bad, what would happen when this particular engagement kicks off is not worth really dwelling on too much. But the international community must get a grip, and they must understand that Israel is violating, and there has to be some firm deterrence and actions. And that includes Russia, who say they've given S-400s to Syria, but we never see the materialization of these S-400s, because that technology could actually stop Israel launching any kind of attacks on Syria.
Thank you, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas and Mr. Arnold. August, thank you for your patience. I would like to welcome you to the program, sir. Now, Mr. August, if you simply Google, or if anyone simply Googles UN resolutions against Israel, there's so many that come up, it boggles the mind, and there's always 118, 119, 120 countries, sometimes 122 countries that are for the resolution. It's always vetoed by the U.S. There's this one veto, and it's American. What are they? It's Israelis, targeted assassinations of Palestinian mayors, city workers, city council members. It's wild the kind of people that they're allowed to target and get vetoed when so many countries want it to stop. Your thoughts on the protection that Israel receives and why it is not forced to play by the same rules as the rest of us?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say that it is quite, even though according to the reports, Israel does not admit to having assassinated al-Saleh, but the fact is only last Monday, if I recall, the Israeli Prime Minister announced that they're going to establish two more illegal settlements on the Golan Heights. And only a short while after that, he said, the Golan Heights is Israeli, period, full stop. So the goal is obviously they target al-Saleh because it is well known. He is a very well-known figure, popular figure in the Golan Heights. And in order for the Israelis to move forward and completely annex and occupy Golan Heights, they would have to get rid of someone who's so popular. But the question is, this might also backfire against him, as people in that area who know him very well are bound to revolt against the latest Israeli criminal activity there. I'd just like to add one other point. Like, why, how come Israel is so bolded to carry this out now at this time? I think there's other geopolitical factors, and that is since the American defeat in Afghanistan, some commentators, especially in Canada, say the disastrous ending in Afghanistan. The fact is that it was disastrous for 20 years, but the defeat of the United States in Afghanistan was a major victory for the peoples of the world who oppose U.S. hegemony.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program. Sayyid Mohsen Abbas there joining us from London, and Arnold August joining us from Montreal. And that's a wrap for the segment of your news review. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Protests in Sudan. Thousands have taken to the streets of the capital demanding the resignation of the transitional government. Protesters accused the transitional government of failing to improve the economic and political situation in Sudan. They voiced support for the army and called for the military to seize power. Sudan's military and civilian groups have been sharing power in an alliance since President Omar al-Bashir was toppled in 2019. Military leaders have called for political reforms following a failed coup attempt in September attributed to Bashir's loyalists. Civilian leaders have accused the military officials of aiming for a power grab. Pro-civilian groups have planned protests next week. Political commentator Aba Yomi Azakiwa says Sudanese people are discontent at the lack of improvement in the country's economic situation.
Well, the conditions that precipitated the coup against Omar al-Bashir in April of 2019 was the declining economic situation in the Republic of Sudan. There have been demonstrations for about 5 months, and then the army stepped in and took power. Now, the civilian groups, civil society organizations, opposition political parties, wanted a civilian interim government. There was a compromise reached later on in 2019, which created the Transitional Sovereign Council, but the chair of the council, is the General al-Burhan. Now, it appears as if supporters of the military staged the demonstration that occurred earlier today. Yet, as you mentioned, those who oppose military leadership is scheduled to have their demonstration this coming Thursday. So there's a discontent over the lack of progress in regard to improving the economy in Sudan, and also the confusion around both the domestic as well as foreign policies of that country.
Iraq's Electoral Commission says the turnout in the country's parliamentary election held last Sunday was 43%. The commission said more than 9.6 million people cast their ballots in the October the 10th vote. The figure is lower than the last voting that took place in 2018. The party-led influential cleric Murtada al-Sadr came first and won 73 seats. Several Iraqi factions, including the Fatah Alliance, that should be, dismissed the results as fabricated. A total of 329 seats were up for grabs in the election. More than 3,240 candidates were vying for the seats. Violence surging in Indian-controlled Kashmir. Six people have died in shootings as well as clashes between government forces and pro-independence fighters. Clashes left two forces and two fighters dead. A street vendor and a laborer also died in separate shootings that police blamed on pro-independence fighters. Latest deaths bring to 28 the number of people killed in Indian-controlled Kashmir over the past 2 weeks. Civilians are among those killed. The Muslim-majority region has been seeking independence from India for decades now. Tensions have mounted since August 2019, when the Indian government annulled Kashmir's semi-autonomy and put it under direct New Delhi rule.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
A new study by Environmental Working Group scientists finds almost 42,000 potential sources of the toxic forever chemicals known as PFAS that could be polluting surface water or drinking water in communities across the U.S. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stansil, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Nearly 42,000 Sources of Toxic Forever Chemicals Put U.S. Drinking Water at Risk, Study Shows. Stay tuned for more. Bolstering calls for stronger PFAS regulations and more testing, a new analysis released recently finds nearly 42,000 potential sources of toxic forever chemicals that could contaminate drinking water in communities throughout the United States. In their peer-reviewed study, which was published in a special issue of Water Science, Environmental Working Group EWG scientists examined the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency EPA enforcement and compliance history online database to identify potential sources of PFAS and polyfluoroalkyl substances, that is PFAS pollution, in the U.S. surface and drinking water. According to their investigation, solid waste landfills, wastewater treatment plants, electroplaters, and metal finishers and petroleum refiners were the facilities that appeared most often as possible sources of PFAS contamination. Opt forever chemicals because they don't break down and can persist in the environmental and bioaccumulate over time. PFAS are a class of synthetic compounds that have been linked to adverse health outcomes, including a weakened immune system, reproductive and developmental harms, and an increased susceptibility to cancer, among other negative effects. EWG researchers point out that discharges of PFAS with industrial wastewater are a major driver of surface and drinking water pollution, putting the health of tens of millions of Americans in jeopardy. Despite these risks, the paper notes the vast majority of water systems nationwide lack both the technology and the funds to filter out forever chemicals. It is critical that the EPA start regulating PFAS now. David Andrews, the lead author of the study and a senior scientist at EWG, said in a statement, adding, "Every community in the U.S. is likely affected by PFAS contamination, but those living near or downstream from industrial facilities may be more at risk. Investigation identifies a huge number of potential sources of contamination. It also provides a framework for deciding where and what to test so we can end releases into the environment," unquote. The paper includes case studies of data available from California and Michigan, which show that PFAS pollution is common at a variety of sites, heightening the importance of widespread testing for forever chemicals in wastewater. Andrew said the results from states like Michigan show there is a wide variety of sources of PFAS in surface water. Many landfills and industrial sites release PFAS at detectable concentrations that may exceed state limits or health guidelines for PFAS in water. He added that it is urgent that ongoing releases of PFAS be identified. We need to stop non-essential uses of PFAS and use filters to reduce these compounds from our water. Getting forever chemicals out of the country's water supplies remains a nationwide challenge, EWG stressed, adding, but it's one that can be met through comprehensive tests of surface water and drinking water, along with tests of wastewater from potential PFAS sources. In July, the U.S. House passed the PFAS Action Act of 2021, which would improve the federal oversight and facilitate the cleanup of forever chemicals, but the U.S. Senate has yet to take up the legislation. In the meantime, EWG implored the Biden administration to use the EPA's powers to regulate as many industrial categories of PFAS discharges as possible, calling the agency's proposal to regulate just some releases of forever chemicals into the U.S. drinking water inadequate to end the pollution flowing from companies. Scott Faber, EWG Senior Vice President for Government Affairs, said that we need to turn off the tap of PFAS pollution from these industrial discharges, which affects more and more Americans every day. That's the first step. The second step is for the EPA to set a national PFAS drinking water standard, and the third is to clean up legacy pollution.
food for thought.
Hello, everyone. Today, on the 9th of Rabiul Awal, the first day of the start of the mission of the Lord of the Age, the Holy Prophet's 12th and last infallible successor, Abu Saleh al-Mahdi, may God hasten his return, following the martyrdom of his father, Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him, the day before. Here is a saying from the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, regarding the awaited Savior of mankind, who is presently in occultation by the will of God, and will reappear in the end times to establish a global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. The earth shall never be devoid of the divine proof. He may be apparent and prominent, or he may be concealed and hidden. And it is because of him that the proofs and signs of Allah are not wasted.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Today's lesson, Heavy Duties of Imam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Brothers and sisters, who is an Imam and what are his main duties? Have you ever thought about it? Have you tried to get an answer of what the role of an imam is? We know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created the world, sent the prophet, sent his book, and then sent a series of imams, just like a series of prophets. Why did he send the imams? What is the major role of the imam? And have you ever thought how difficult it is, the main duties that the imam is assigned and designated by Allah to carry out? This is what we would like to discuss today, and in the light of this whole discussion, we will open up some of our responsibilities. Imam Ridha alayhi salam, the 8th infallible imam, has said, "The imam is the trustee of Allah on earth and among his people, and his proof for the servants and his representative in the cities and summoner towards him," that is Allah, "and protector of divine sanctuaries." So see, the duties of an imam, according to this one tradition, there are so many of them, right? And they're all, if you notice, they're all very heavy duties. These are not small tasks. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has burdened imams with this responsibility. Allah has made sure that the best of us, they are responsible for the biggest of all the responsibilities. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the heavy duties of imam, and we realize that the duties of imams are very heavy, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala expects them to carry those out. So the first duty, according to this tradition of Imam Ridha alayhi salam, is imam is a treasurer and trustee of revelation and protector of all sciences, commands, and knowledge of religion. The imam is supposed to protect all this. Now the question is, with whose help and how is imam going to single-handedly do that? This is where we realize that there is a responsibility on the shoulder of those who consider themselves to be the followers of imams. The second duty is, Imam is a living proof of divine religion. You know, when it comes to defending Islam, the beliefs of Islam, the beliefs of the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, this is the duty of Imam to do that in reality. And in its occultation, it is the duty of the fuqaha, the jurists of Islam. Number third duty is, Imam is divinely appointed supervisor and authority and God's representative among people. This is who Imam is. The fourth one is, Imam is the one who calls people towards goodness and forbids evil and is the greatest emissary of religion. Last but not the least, Imam is a protector of divine sanctuaries against the invasion of enemies. To carry out such tasks requires someone who has access to divine knowledge and is infallible. True Imams are the ones with these qualities, and nobody except Allah can appoint them. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
To catch the balloon. That's what competitors played to win the title at the first Balloon World Cup in Spain. The competition was held in an amusement park in the northeastern city of Tarragona. Participants had to get the balloon to touch the ground before their opponent could touch it. The event was organized by FC Barcelona player Gerard Piqué and a famous web streamer and commentator.
Get out of your comfort zone and try new things. Today we are very proud to have tried something like that and that it has worked so well and that people have enjoyed it. In the end, it's about people having a great time.
The competition was inspired by a trio of American siblings whose balloon game videos had attracted millions of views on TikTok and Instagram. 32 countries competed for the title. An 18-year-old teenager from Peru became the first world champion of this tournament. He defeated his German rival in a 5-minute final match. For those of you with an extreme fear of needles, this may finally be the good news. A group of Dutch researchers say they are working to create painless needle-free injections. The researchers have developed what they call a bubble gun. The device uses a laser to push tiny droplets through the skin. Take a listen to David Fernandez Rivas, the head of the project, explaining how the process is done within a millisecond.
So within a millisecond, the glass that contains the liquid is heated by a laser. A bubble is created in the liquid, pushing the liquid at velocities on the order of 100 kilometers per hour. And we can see the gelatin, how it penetrates about 1 millimeter approximately.
Now, Rivas says the invention will help ease fear of needles and lower the threshold for vaccinations. He believes the new technology can also prevent the risk of contamination through needles and reduce medical waste. If you're eager to get a needle-free shot, you may still have to wait a few more years before they are made available to everyone. From a voyage aboard a fictional spacecraft to a real-life journey to space, a 90-year-old Canadian actor known for his portrayal of a starship captain for decades is now the oldest person ever going to space. After a couple of days of training, William Shatner hitched a ride aboard a suborbital spacecraft on Wednesday. He took off from a Texas desert as a guest alongside three other passengers, two professionals, and a paid customer. During the 10-minute flight, the team experienced more than 3 minutes of weightlessness. Now, listen to the actor describing the voyage as the most unbelievable experience of his life.
I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary. I hope I never recover from this. I hope that I can maintain what I feel now. I don't want to lose it.
During a televised journey, the capsule took its four passengers above the maximum altitude of 100 kilometers, a point where the curvatures of the Earth can be seen. With that, the space captain of the entertainment world also broke a record as the oldest space traveler. Now, many see his experience as the embodiment of the space travel promises he made through decades of acting. The population of giant pandas in captivity has reached a record high of 673 in 2021. Official data shows this year 48 panda cubs were born, of which 46 survived. Meanwhile, the total number of overseas giant pandas has reached 69. This is the result of joint efforts by Chinese and foreign researchers following decades of caring for the lovely animals. In July, another study put the number of giant pandas living in the wild at over 1,800. The cute bears were then reclassified from endangered to vulnerable. Experts believe such research improves conservation efforts and facilitates monitoring of animal populations. With the help of artificial intelligence, Beethoven's 10th and last symphony is now completed. A group of German musicologists and programmers started the project over a year ago. They analyzed Beethoven's style and then used algorithms to teach a computer to complete the unfinished job. The work was released to mark the 250th anniversary of the prominent musician's birth. The team said they tried hard to solve the puzzle while remaining faithful to Beethoven's process and vision.
I believe that if a composer like Ludwig van Beethoven were to live today, he would probably not only have a large technology team around him to help him, but he would push exactly such technologies and use them for his art. And for me, art is not something that stands fixed in space and is always the same, but that changes with the world, and we can witness that today.
When the German composer died in 1827, he left behind some musical sketches for his 10th symphony. Some experts tried to complete it in the past, but they did not succeed. Researchers in the United States have created an incredibly versatile robot named Leonardo or Leo. Leo was developed by a team at the California Institute of Technology's Center for Autonomous Systems and Technologies. The futuristic robot can walk a tightrope, skateboard, and even fly. Its uniqueness lies in the fact that it uses not just one, but two modes of locomotion. The researchers who developed Leo believe that similar robots will be employed on a wider scale in the future.
I think we're going to see robots like Leonardo with these extraordinary locomotion capabilities be used in things like space exploration, because they can overcome very difficult terrain, they can reach hard-to-reach places. But then I think also robots will be more and more in our daily lives. As these robots become more and more robust, more and more reliable, we're going to see them for things like package delivery or helping in the house with daily chores.
Leo is 75 centimeters tall and has four propeller thrusters mounted on the shoulders. While walking, it mimics the movements of a human by using those propellers and a pair of actuated legs. The robot can transition smoothly between flying and walking. Leonardo perceives the world around it with the help of cameras and sensors.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Hot air balloons were invented in the 18th century, enabling man to finally fulfill his dream of flying. After more than 200 years, people are still eager to ride the colorful vehicles. Some even use them competitively. In the German Hot Air Ballooning Championships, balloonists will fly over the skies of the green Bavarian town of Tegernsee. 25 of Germany's best pilots are vying for first place. The organizers of the event expect a tight race, as the contestants have all managed to pass the previous competitions with flying colors to qualify for the national championship.
A zoo in northeast France has an adorable new inhabitant, a white baby rhinoceros. The cute little male rhino was born on the 6th of October. The zoo staff have given him the name of Mole. He was able to withstand less than 2 hours after being born. Mole soon started feeding from his gentle 21-year-old mother called Tala. Mole is Tala's third baby.
Children and young adults have once again come back to cinema as Iran is hosting the 34th edition of the International Film Festival for Children and Youth. Salman Kujuri has the story.
The 34th edition of the International Film Festival for Children and Youth is underway in Iran, with around 600 films from 32 countries having entered the contest. The motto of this year's festival is Cinema, the Land of Imagination. In the national section, some 440 films from Iranian movie makers have been submitted to the secretariat of the festival, including 248 short, 119 short animated, 30 feature-length and 14 feature films, 12 web series, and also 19 Korean narrations.
This edition of the festival can be considered as a festival of cinema products for the most important generation of the next century. A generation that must redefine the country in the new world and protects its power, culture, pride, and identity. Although the tragedy of the pandemic is terrible, at least it assures us that the next generation from an early age has experienced and learned to deal with difficult circumstances and pay due attention to the importance of cooperation and teamwork in the face of major crises.
The foreign films include 32 animated and 30 feature-length movies from 32 countries, as well as 56 short movies, including 21 short animated and 35 short feature films. The movies have been screened in two cities, Tehran and Isfahan, both in an online format and in theaters in compliance with the health protocols.
I've narrated a couple of films at this festival, and I love to watch children's films. I love comedy. I watched a number of movies at this festival, and they've been good.
This year, I have taken part in this edition of the festival with a film for which my colleagues and I have tried so hard to produce. I care about the children of my country because they are future makers of this land. I hope children will like my movie.
Such platforms as Hachur, Tiva and Filima have displayed the films, and the online audience can watch the works on these three online platforms.
Children's movies are an excellent way to educate them. They can be very useful to teach them history, show them different cultures, accustom them to fundamental values, and show them how to think, all in a simple and entertaining way. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Greek Postal Service has come up with an innovative idea to speed up the mail sorting process, not by humans, but a fleet of robots. 55 tiny yellow robots powered by artificial intelligence are helping employees in Hellenic Post Sorting Center. They scan postal codes to identify the bundle's destination, weigh the parcels, and put them in related platforms. The program aims to handle increasing number of packages from online shopping, especially during the pandemic.
The end result is a threefold increase in sorting speed of parcels, ensuring next day delivery for our customers. These autonomous mobile robots are energy efficient, thus directly reducing the energy consumption of the sorting process, and that way allowing us to take a greener approach to operations.
According to the company, up to 80% of mail sorting has been passed to the four-wheeled robots. Each day, these little machines manage around 168,000 packages weighing up to 15 kilograms. Every 4 hours, they need recharging, which takes 5 minutes. Australian scientists have developed artificial structures that act as a much-needed habitat for marine life.
It's extremely exciting because we have seen a total of more than 90 species colonizing these diverse panels. And we see 30 to 40% more species on the panels in the living seawalls than on the unmodified parts of the seawall, so the seawalls with no panels. So that's extremely exciting. And really gives us confidence to scale this up to other environments and other artificial structures.
The project has installed over 1,000 artificially designed panels onto seawalls in Sydney. These craggy concrete panels are 3D printed and designed to last for at least 20 years. Only a short time after installation, they turned into a cozy new home for the fish, crustaceans, and other marine life.
So we have more fish in Sydney Harbour than we have in the entire UK coast. So we have more than 500 species of fish in the harbour, so that's quite impressive. But what we notice is that urbanization and the human settling, especially towards the coast, has a lot of impacts on this amazing marine environment, and that's what we are trying to mitigate a bit with the living seawalls. By attaching these panels that mimic natural features such as rocky shores and rock pools and crevices and nooks and crannies.
After becoming popular in Australia, the panels were also installed in Wales and Singapore. The scientists say since the installation of these panels, the quality of Sydney's harbour water has improved. They hope coastal structures built in the future would be ecologically sustainable, designed not only for humans, but for nature.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com facebook.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
An Austrian environmental law group has recently filed an official complaint at the International Criminal Court accusing Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro of crimes against humanity for his administration's role in pushing deforestation in the Amazon rainforest. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Julia Conley, journalist. This article is published under the heading Bolsonaro accused of crimes against humanity at ICC over Amazon destruction. Stay tuned for more. An Austrian environmental law group recently filed an official complaint at the International Criminal Court accusing Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro of crimes against humanity for his administration's role in pushing deforestation in the Amazon rainforest. The complaint by the organization All Rise highlights Bolsonaro's alleged actions since taking office in 2019 and their direct link to the heating of the planet, affecting not just indigenous environmental defenders in the Amazon, but the global population as well. Johannes Weisman, the founder of All Rise and its new project titled The Planet Versus Bolsonaro, said in a statement, "Crimes against nature are crimes against humanity. Jair Bolsonaro is fueling the mass destruction of the Amazon with eyes wide open and in full knowledge of the consequences. The ICC has a clear duty to investigate environmental crimes of such global gravity." He added, "With the power of the law and the support of the public, the ICC will need to act. Bolsonaro will be brought to justice." Since Bolsonaro took office, the rate of deforestation in the Amazon has risen by as much as 88% as the extreme right-wing president has attempted to open up the forest to more economic development. In July 2019, the number of fires set in the Amazon, a frequent occurrence driven by ranching, agricultural, and mining interests, jumped 28% compared to the year prior, with the country's National Institute for Space Research recording 6,803 blazes in a month. In the first year of Bolsonaro's presidency, more than 3,700 square miles of the Amazon were burnt, a portion of the jungle equal to the size of Lebanon. The president has also gutted regulations protecting the Amazon, with his administration reducing fines for illegal logging by 42%. Environmental defenders, including many members of indigenous tribes, have come under attack for trying to defend the forest, which serves as a crucial carbon sink for the planet as well as a habitat for more than 3 million species, including 2,500 tree species. As Common Dreams reported last month, 20 environmental defenders in Brazil were killed in 2020, with several of the murders linked to the logger sector. We are saying as a result of the state policy that they are pursuing, they're knowingly aiding and abetting the perpetrators on the ground committing crimes such as murder, persecution, and other inhuman acts. Lawyer Nigel Povos, who has prosecuted international crimes, told AFP. Previously, indigenous leaders in Brazil have issued formal complaints regarding Bolsonaro's alleged crimes against humanity at the ICC. In January, Chief Raoni Metiker of Kayapo people and Chief Almer of Peter Sorgi tribe accused the Brazilian president fueling the assassination of indigenous leaders, which was at an 11-year high, as well as deforestation. All Rise said the complaint filed recently was the first to underscore the effects that Bolsonaro's attacks on the Amazon are having on the planet as a whole. According to the organization, the emissions caused by Bolsonaro's policies will cause over 180,000 deaths related to excess heat this century. What's happening in Brazil, mass deforestation, we want to understand the causal link to the global climate, Weisman told AFE recently. It is exactly what the Rome Statute defines as a crime against humanity, the intentional destruction of the environment and environmental defenders.
A moment before the break of dawn, life in the Niger begins with the rhythm of the calm, small, brilliant waves of the lakes of Mali. Calm and silent, yet glistening with life. This magical place lies right in the middle of the vast, burning desert of Africa. As the sun peaks over the horizon, life's current gains momentum. The inhabitants, mostly farmers, begin their day early, making their living by selling goods, and one can see more people starting off their working day as well. Residents of the beach are rather laid back. Men congregate to play games together and listen to the radio. Life is simple here, much like the type of goods the people sell. As simple, perhaps, as preparing a cup of tea.
Burnt books.
Not far away, mothers are working too. As they work, they sing their songs of legend that tell traditional tales of their history. Folklore of kings and lesser rulers with their faces hidden behind wooden masks. They had won battles against beasts and great wizards, and they had discovered great treasures, all in the name of an expansive, mystical land called Mali. Not all of Mali's tales, however, are of legend. This country has survived the intrusion of a number of colonial empires, which occupied Western Africa